welcome to another episode of GT Radio. I'm Tino Magnetta. Tonight I got a paisan on the show. Yes, that's right, a fellow Italian. And we were just talking about some great things before we hopped on here. Welcome to the show, Matthew Mingrone. How are you, buddy?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Tino.
Now, we're both kind of like from the same backgrounds of Italian immigrants, and that kind of shaped a little bit of who you are, because as we both know, back then it was all about the hustle, right? And I know your dad worked three jobs, and he was doing it, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
We have, like you said, the immigrant background where they worked hard. It didn't matter how many jobs. My dad did work three jobs, and sometimes came home 11, 12 o'clock at night after teaching night school. And, you know, that was the original side hustle. I know the millennials think that they invented it, but my dad, my grandpa had two different jobs. You know, those are the original side hustlers. But they always instilled that in me and my brothers, and it was always about hard work. And you never went home and said the teacher gave you too much homework. Because then guess what? Now you got to do the dishes, and now you got to go cut the grass and do more homework. So it was always.
That's right. You never got rewarded. It was always tough one. Yeah. You think that kind of shaped the way you deal with life?
Absolutely.
How is that? Explain that to us a little bit.
So the way, you know, after you see people like that, you know, my grandparents, my father, even my mother, and they had jobs, and they were always working and busting their butt for us to have what little we did have, and it makes you appreciate it. And so when it comes time for you to step up to the plate, if I saw something I wanted, whether it was to be a marketing manager, director, or even GM now, you know that you got to put some work behind it, but you focus on that goal. How am I going to get there? What's the path? And to me, that's always shaped whatever challenges I've had. I've thought about, I expect it to have some work behind it. So it's not a surprise. And it's when something to me becomes a little too easy, I get a little suspicious. I didn't have to really work for that. What happened there? And, you know, the best results always come from, and are always the sweetest when you work the hardest for them.
Do you think that a lot has changed from when you were doing it like that at that age to other people coming up at that age? Do you think there's a difference, or is it the same principle?
I'm not saying that there's still a lot of hardworking people. I mean, I don't think that part changes, but it's a different level, I think. I know that a lot of kids that we hire, or even my nephews, and they get maybe caught up with because we as parents, you know, and I even have friends that are grandparents. They'll try to maybe eliminate some of that work to make it a little bit easier. So when it comes time for the work, I've seen my nephew go, oh, well, I got to do that just to get that, or even my kids, I got to do that just to get X, Y, and Z, whatever it might be. And never mind. And so that's the
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because we spoil people. We spoil our kids, our grandkids. We spoil our nieces, our nephews, because you know how hard it was to work, how hard your parents worked, and you always want your kids to have better than you. And I think that's just a general human nature thing.
I think back in the day when you and I grew up, I think the resources were a lot more limited, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we didn't have things like technology to make our lives easier, right?
No.
If you had to pull over to tell your mom you were coming home, you had to go to a payphone. I mean, it wasn't just pick up the phone and text.
If she was at home, you would be able to, otherwise you wouldn't be able to get her.
Right, exactly right.
Now, you have a pretty interesting story about the hospitality things. It was kind of baked in the cake already for you. Tell us a little bit about that.
I was, from a little kid, I've always been interested in casinos and gambling. I mean, Ocean's 11 was one of my favorite movies with Frank Sinatra and those guys, and I always thought that was a great movie. But we were allowed to go out to dinner, pick a restaurant to go out to dinner every year, once we were past 10. And so when I was 12, I picked the Turf Club at the Meadows Racetrack out in Washington, Pennsylvania, which is a very nice casino, does very well for itself. But it was just harness racing. And my parents were like, are you sure you want to go there? I'm like, oh, God, the glamour of harness track or horse racing. To me, that
you
was
loved
the,
it.
That
you
was
loved
the thing.
It.
It was in
How
my
old
blood.
Were you?
So, you know, I was 12, and I had my dad making $2 bets going up to the window, and then he was getting so tired because he couldn't finish his meal. And I was he's like, can we just finish our meal? Don't you want birthday cake? I'm like, don't place this bet. And and so, you know, while driving home, my parents were saying,
right,
you know,
because they took you there on your birthday, right? They took you there on your birthday, and you were running back and forth eating the cake, but also making the bets, right?
Yeah, I was having my dad making the bets in between his bites, and he was getting frustrated.
What a story!
So, you know, that point
it.
Was pretty much sold in the. I was dyed in the wool, ready to go to be in the casino business.
Yeah. That was fun.
From there.
Come on, Matthew. Come on, go place this bet. Hurry up before you just see it.
Oh, driving my dad nuts.
Come on, hurry
up. He had to get
up
and go make the bet.
Yeah.
Hurry up before this
race
closes.
That's hilarious. Yeah, come on, hurry up. But it was all part of it, right? It was all part of the experience, right?
Oh,
it was
absolutely.
All part of the experience. You'll never forget that. I mean, you know, harness racing now is a lost art, but it was the kind of same thrill you get when you experience when you go into a casino that's well run, right? You get that adrenaline.
Absolutely.
Rush, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's what you got.
Later on,
so you get
in our lives. Oh, yeah, that was the hook. That was the hook. And then later on, when I was in high school, we used to go to the Jersey Shore. I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, man.
I grew up there. And
yeah,
we'd
I remember
go to the Jersey
this.
Shore.
Yeah.
And we went to my parents' friends or the friends of families I was with. They would go in Atlantic City, and they would go, and we would tag along and hang out on the boardwalk. Every now and then, we'd sneak into the Playboy and try to sneak around security. And, you know, they were too good.
Yeah.
They were, like, pushing us away. But it was a challenge of the lights of the machines and the yelling at the craps
the
table.
The sounds and, yeah.
Oh,
people
yeah.
People all dressed
it was
up, right?
Glamour.
Everybody dressed
up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, back in the day,
the big time.
Heck yeah.
Back
men
in
wore sport coats.
To the nines.
At minimum.
To the nines.
It was a night out.
Yeah, it was crazy. What was your first break?
You know, my first break, I was in South Shore Lake Tahoe at what was then called the Horizon. And I was working the front desk. And they had a publicity manager position. And, you know, I have a degree and stuff, and I always wanted to get in the casino business, and this was my shot. And Don Kennedy was the vice president of marketing. He gave me my first shot, and he said to me, he goes, you don't have any experience. He goes, because all I want you to do is work hard at whatever I give you to do. And there comes that work ethic part again. And I gave him 100%, and I learned so much from that man and that property. And he was a great mentor. He really was a great mentor.
What do you think he saw in you? Because obviously, he didn't know about your work ethic when he sat down and talked to you. But what do you think that he saw in you from what he asked you?
Well, you know, we had a long conversation before the interviews, and I was always friendly as a front desk clerk, and he had talked to the manager, the front office manager.
Right.
He had talked to them about and then, you know, I told him, he asked me one question. What do you want to do? What are you doing here all the way from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? And I said, I just want to be in this business. I want to be in this business, and I always wanted to work where people go on vacation and where people go to have fun. And I said, I'll bust my butt for you. No matter what you tell me to do, I'll do it. And that became the thing. I was always available. He'd call down the hall because we didn't have a director or even a manager in between us. It was vice president and then me as publicity manager. Hey, who can go to this chili cook-off and this regional chili cook-off and take some prizes? Or who can go stand at this booth at the sales show down in San Francisco, help out the sales department? Or who can do it? Who can go pick up the GM or the CEO of the property at the airport? Okay, I'll do it. And I just whatever he asked me to do, I did it.
Whatever you needed to do, you did. Yeah, and then you started to get a multitude of experience with different people on different levels.
Absolutely, and I just watched him, just like I watched my parents. Now, here's a guy that was the vice president of marketing standing on a ladder hanging strings of garland or pictures of winners and signs and hanging them on the, doing the dirty work. And then when you turn around and you say, well, if this guy can do it, I'm going to do it. And he's got his suit cost more than my car at the time. If he's willing to get up there in his suit and hammer nails into a wall for winner's pictures or whatever it might be, why can't I? Lead by example.
So then you went to the Hilton, right?
Right after that, I went to the Reno Hilton, yeah, and he actually brought me down because of our relationship. And, I go from publicity and promotions to the more specialized player development. I was the casino marketing manager. Here I have a whole new world. I think we had 8 hosts at the time that had much more experience than me that reported to me. And the same thing applied. I just, watched them try to help and be there. It's all about people. It's all about, this is a people business. They say, people will say to me all the time, well, you're in the money-making business or you're the entertainment business. We're not. We're in the people business.
More than any other business.
Yeah, because there's 2 groups of people that you got to worry about. First is your team, and the second of all is your guests. And that's been the same thing since probably the first casino opened to today and beyond. So I learned a lot from him on people. And that's what player development is all about, people.
Yeah, it sounds like everywhere you went, you just soaked up the invitation, and you make your transition, and then you transitioned from the Bay Mills, right, to the GM at Eagle Mountain. Tell me a little bit about that transition for you, because that was a big one, right?
Yeah, well, it was a major, because I had been – when I came here to Eagle Mountain, I had been a marketing director or in marketing management for all, at that time, probably 19 years of my career. And I got here at Eagle Mountain, I was a marketing director, and our general manager was getting ready to retire. He'd been here already going on 10 years. So I was here about 4 years, but he kept involving me. Here's another guy, Tom Stewart, kept involving me in other things besides marketing. Help out food and beverage with this. Go look this over and help out the slot department, or work with table games on staffing or tournaments or things that, would be more like an assistant GM. So I was fortunate to have people trust me, but also, I'd ask for direction and then I'd follow it and get it done and maybe tweak it here and there to make it successful. But it came down to being available, always being available. So when he retired, and lucky guy, got to go hunting and fishing and do all the things he wants to do, golfing. We sat around as a bunch of department heads and we're like, well, we're getting nervous. What if they bring in somebody that wants to change everybody? And I said, you know what? Why not me? And nobody said no. So that's how I kind of won over the council. Why not me? I know the team. I've been here 4 years at the time, 4.5 years. I know the guests. I know the market. I might need some help with some of the other departments and stuff, but I know those teammates, those department heads, and I'm not a micromanager. I'm all about learning, and as long as we work together as a team, we'll be successful. And, we've been very successful, thanks to God and this team, and it's been a great – June 1st will be 5 years as me being the general manager.
Congratulations. And when you took the job – How long had you been in the business?
When I took the job as GM, 23 years in the business.
So it took you 23 years to get to the GM business, and that I'm just saying that because a lot of our listeners are going to be younger, and so that people, Matthew, you and I know you're not born a GM. It's a very complicated job, and you need a lot of time to learn a lot of different things because you have to know every single department pretty well because then you got to read the numbers, et cetera, et cetera. So everybody listening out there, 23 years, 5 years as a GM, that's almost 30 years total. So,
February will be my 20th, start of my 29th year. It is patience. I didn't think I wanted that kind of responsibility. I never thought I wanted to care like how much the chips cost when we buy new chips or cards, how much the what the if it didn't have anything to do with marketing. I wasn't really sure. But then I kept thinking to myself, I love how it all interacts. I love how every piece is part of this great puzzle, and being able to change some, whether it's cultural things or policy and procedure things, have an impact, have a positive impact on the team as their guests as well. That's what really got me. You know what? That's why I want to be GM. So I want to make a positive impact on the business, but on the people, and be able to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you were ready for it. You felt confident.
I think
that you were ready for it. You know, 23 years in the business. I mean, there weren't you worked most of the major departments with some great mentors. Talking about mentors, let's backtrack a little bit. You had some great mentors, Don Kennedy.
I have. Don Kennedy was a fantastic mentor. Yeah, Jim Kikumoto at Chinook Winds. I just saw Jim at G2E this past year, I think it was, and mm-hmm. I kind of shocked him. I told him, I said, you know, he was one of the guys that sat down with every department head and went over that monthly P&L line by line, and it forced you
and how important
to understand.
Is that?
And it forced you to understand because, number one, you didn't want to be embarrassed with your boss. But number two, you want to, again, make that impact where you're looked upon, where you can be trusted. You know how to manipulate. You know how to work your budget to get the most impact, the most positive, and add addition to the company bottom line. And, between, you know, Jim Kikumoto, Don Kennedy, Tom Stewart, the last GM I had here, it really was interesting. One thing they all had in common, they weren't micromanagers. They were, I'll help you get your job done as a department head. I want your input. There's going to be sometimes I have to say no. But, you know, if I have to say no, that's on you because you have to prove to me what you're trying to sell me or get changed or purchased. You have to prove to me the worth of it. And I'll help you get there, but I can't do your job for you. And, you know, I've learned from some bad people, from bad GMs where they were micromanagers. I'm not going to use their names. But you come to appreciate. We've all had those kind of bosses where they micromanage the heck out of it, which makes you appreciate the people that don't micromanage you and that are more of a facilitator and less of a tyrant. And so those are the things that has really shaped me as a GM. And I have a saying, if I have to write your schedule or if I have to do your job, why do I have you?
That's right.
So, and I'm not trying to be a jerk about it to anybody when I say it. And I understand, you know, I want that person to be the expert in their department. I want the slot directors to be the expert in slots, table games, food and beverage. Those department heads need to be the experts in their spots. And then we work together as a team. What do we all bring to the table?
Yeah. And if there's any issues, they definitely have you to run anything by you. What are the headwinds you see?
What's that?
What are some of the headwinds? We need to watch out for in our industry? There's a lot of expansion, a lot of proliferated gaming. And
I think the thing that concerns me the most is more specialized. It's maybe too reliant on technology and data. I mean, I'm a big believer in data. I'm a big believer in really narrowing your focus and giving people what they want. But losing the personal touch scares me. Losing the one-on-one with a guest, whether they're the biggest player you have or an entry-level person that's never been to your property, that type of guest service always wins out. And they're guests. They're not customers. That was taught to me years and years ago. They're guests, not customers. And if you keep treating people like guests, that's far better. And think about yourself. It's far better than being treated like a customer. You want to be treated as a guest. And that's what I think. That's kind of scares me. I love technology. I'm a big believer in technology in every day. And I'm a techie myself in some regards when it comes to personal technologies. But I get a little nervous when we start to eliminate personal touch or people skills. You know, when you go to a grocery store and you see all these, or even a Walmart or Target where you see these self-checkout aisles, you have nobody touching with that person. You know, have nobody interacting with that person. And that kind of concerns me, because what if they have a complaint, or what if they have a praise for somebody or something? So
yeah, and the other thing too is that ultimately, if you think about it, it's not all data. It's also part gut feeling. You know, it's because you're talking about the experience, and you have run through the experience in your mind, and you already had that experience. Now you want to share it with the customer, and that's a visceral thing. That's not something that you can learn from data, right? It was like you saying,
exactly,
the feeling you had when you saw the casino and people all dressed up,
right?
And that you can't understand with data. That you have to experience that and recreate it.
One of the things that has proved crazy successful, you know, when I first came to this property, the general manager at the time, Tom Stewart, was telling me how great the guest service is. And I'm sure, you know, in my mind, you know, I've been in the business 20 years, whatever it was, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I'm a marketing guy. I know how to use that. That's how true is that really? But then I took off my badge and I went and I stood by the Players Club, and I was incognito, basically looking like a guest, and I started watching the interaction. Now, for people that don't know, this is a casino that's located at the top of a mountain. It's hard to get to. It's practically switchback roads. And it's a typical locals casino. But we're so financially successful, I started asking people, why do they come here when there's other places that are easier to get to? To play a slot machine easier to get to. And it came down to, well, they had relationships with the slot attendant, with the beverage server, with the cooks. And I was listening to all this anecdotal evidence that data would never have captured. This property is in its 23rd year. This is the 23rd year of this property's existence. And we're very, very financially successful because of the people. We have great slot machines, but so does the other guy. We have great table games and fun games, but so does the other guy. Good food, so does everybody. So when it comes down to it, it's what's going to make them make that decision, and it comes down to that personal touch. They were bringing Christmas gifts to a beverage server because they knew her kids liked a certain toy, or vice versa. You had a beverage server that had a slot attendant that had a couple of cigars because she knew that it was that guest's birthday last week, and she didn't get to see him, and she knew what kind of cigar he liked. It's those kind of things that will live on and that will continue to solidify people. Talk about brand loyalty. Marketing could spend millions of dollars, but you can't get that kind of brand loyalty from a guest without that interaction, that personal touch.
Now, do you think that in our business, do you think that we do enough when we talk about, because I know everybody talks about customer service, right? But the thing is, are we doing enough with our customer service strategy? Are we taking it seriously enough that we're actually spending time and money to improve it like we spend money on marketing? You think that we have that attitude towards customer service?
I don't know. I can't really speak for everyone. I know that it's a challenge as an operator, as a GM. You sit and go, oh, God, that's another hour, thousands of dollars to get somebody in, come in and help. But you have to make a concerted effort, and you got to – that starts at the top. I've been at several properties, and you know properties and stuff, where they say, we're going to do tremendous guest service. This is our new program, and we're going to do it, and you're going to get prizes, and you're going to get this and that. And the next thing you know, it's a couple months down the road. The GM's not paying attention, not playing his part, actively supporting his direct reports. Then the direct reports don't support their direct reports. The supervisors don't support the front. And so within 6 months to maybe a year or two, that program's gone and it doesn't really mean anything. So, you know, there's a saying that crap rolls downhill, excuse my language. It doesn't. It rolls uphill.
Yeah, of course.
It rolls uphill because who's responsible ultimately?
Right.
It's me and it's everybody else that's with me. And so I know that places get a little disillusioned with, you know, we have the biggest, most expensive hotel or the biggest, most expensive restaurant or the biggest headline entertainment. But if you don't make the people feel appreciated when they come in, you make them feel appreciated when they leave, they're going to go somewhere else. There's too many options nowadays. I mean, the proliferation is difficult. That's the competition, and it's anything you can spend your money on. Movie theater,
and
restaurant.
It doesn't have to be casinos. It's anything to do with entertainment.
And so, you know, we did a real quick informal study at one of the casinos. I think it was at Bay Mills. And we just asked people as they were coming in and out, what did they like the most or what did they like the best about the property? And one of the things, I really didn't care what they liked the most because those are good things. It's the problems that you want to fix. One of the things they said was, sometimes I can come in and spend $500 or $1,000, and that may be not a lot compared to what your other people spend, but that's a lot to me, and I feel like sometimes I'm ignored. Or sometimes
right.
You don't know that I've spent that money or appreciate it. So that's why, you know, I've always mm-hmm. taken that forward and said, you know, every interaction matters, even if the guest is just asking where the restroom is or what time the buffet opens. You treat them like they're the top player, like they're the most important person in front that we have. And people appreciate that. Think of yourself. And then I think of myself.
There's never
if I go someplace, yeah, if it's apathetic. There's nothing. There's bad service, but just as bad as apathetic service. I don't care.
Yeah.
Is just as bad as someone being rude to you.
What would you tell the people coming up the ranks, the younger kids?
Patience, like we said previously, and always be open. You know, when my boss used to call down the hall, hey, who wants to drive down to San Francisco? We got to go to a trade and travel show, and the sales team's tied up something else. Or who wants to give a tour of the casino? Do this. Or even today, who wants to, you know, go and, like, somebody asked me, hey, can you come by and speak to our orientation class? Oh, my God, I forgot. Yeah. Yeah, do I want to go home? Absolutely. But all those experiences add up to not just your resume, but your understanding of people, understanding of how this business works, and helps you make decisions later on down the road. I was so blessed to have people that would give me responsibility, give me direction, but give me the responsibility because they knew I would try my hardest. And then, you know, if I made mistakes, which I have, you know, nobody's perfect. Don't tell my ex-wife that, but I've made some mistakes in my life. And you got to learn from those mistakes. One thing I pride myself on is not making the same mistake twice, but always be available and open for the challenge. And if it means work, it means work. But in the end, it's going to help you. It might not be tomorrow. It might be 6 months. It might be 5 years from now. In my case, some of it was 23 years later. Or I got the chance to make an impact.
Yeah, you're definitely doing that. What do you see in the future for our business, 10, 15 years out?
I really like, I do, and this is where I kind of contradict myself. I love the technology, and I love the player games now that like Gamblet has and those types of games with the skill-based games. And I don't have any Gamblet games on my floor, so that was a free shout-out to them. But I love those kind of skill-based games, and I think you see it on cell phones, so you know it's just a natural progression in our business. And I think that as they're playing the Candy Crush and stuff today, you can have those types of games tomorrow in your floor. And I think that it has to. We have to progress past. Yes, the reels still have their place. Heck, in this day and age, we still have all these different pay lines and video games, but we still have some IGTs with the reels, double diamond reels, that are still just as popular. So everything has
right,
its place.
Right, people like that.
But I think the interaction starting to intertwine the newer technology is kind of the way to get people back or get younger people more interested and more involved because it's something they're familiar with. I think the other part of it is, you know, getting back to our roots of being a service industry. You know, we don't use that phrase too much anymore, but we are a service industry. That's one thing I noticed about hospitality. It does matter. So I think that's still going to play a major role. And I know we use the thing about guest experience, user experience, but I think the main thing is to continue the combination of technology, personal touch, technology where you want it, but also having that personal touch where you need it. And I think that that continues to be, we're always going to be the service industry.
Yeah.
And I think coming forward is whoever can combine those together with those newer games and the newer ideas, it becomes the winner, really.
Positioning yourself for the future.
Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Having a good time never goes out of style.
No, of course not. You talked a little bit about how when 2008 was the only time that the casino business actually reset itself.
Yeah.
Because of the financial crisis. What happened then? And where has it grown to now? Because I think the competition is building. But what happened in 2008? What did we realize as an industry?
And, you know, I'm not an expert, but what I witnessed was the people that got hurt by the 2008 more than other recessions that I know of, because I'm not that old, but your average blue collar, because it was the housing is what really started it, right? And so these were people that were working class that maybe got into a loan, or even middle class got into a loan and then got, you know, destroyed by balloon payments and all that bad debt really piled and piled. And those were the people that were hurt. And if you look at our business, everybody can talk about the 80-20 rule and their whales and their top end, but really your lifeblood is your blue-collar average, you know, they call them FITs, your average travel.
Middle level, yeah, the mid-level.
And so that's
your
volume.
That's your bread and butter, yeah.
That's your bread and butter, exactly. And whether you're a tourist place or a grind joint, locals grind joint, it turns out to be that's the least amount of people you can lose. That's the least category you can lose. Because that is the most valuable, right? Because that makes up a lot of your spend. And your whales, your top end, your diamond players or whatever, your elite players, sure. But they weren't the ones that were hurt as much as everybody else in the beginning. Then everybody else tightened up and got nervous because we all did.
Yeah, of course.
That's what originally, to me, that's originally how it all started.
Yeah. And that fundamentally changed because I think it was the first time that the casino business had been hit and actually got affected by the downturn in the economy, right?
Well, yeah, because, you know, I remember when I first started in this business in 91, I remember my bosses and other department heads saying two things that always go up in a recession or in an economic downturn, gambling and alcohol consumption.
Right.
And that was not the case this time because the people that were hurt the most were the people that didn't have as much to lose. I mean, they had more to lose. It meant more to them.
Got it.
So, you know, I think happened.
Should we take some calls?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Matthew?
I do. Hello? You hear me?
Hello.
Hello. We can, yes. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Hi. My name's Arcel. I'm actually calling from New York City. You talked a lot about some of the challenges from, you know, 08. My question for you is, what do you think was the biggest challenge that you have to overcome in current times right now?
You know, it's difficult right now. I'm in California, and a lot of states are going through this now with minimum wage and things. But people have a livable wage. And I think that's become a challenge, that and healthcare costs. There's two things that you can't control.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to give people a livable wage, and healthcare is going through the roof, right? We have no control of that. And so that's where you got to weigh out how your departments are structured. I have the saying that if you are getting full-time benefits, then I need to get full-time hours from you. And maybe being leaner and meaner. We used to have – it was almost 40% of our workforce here was part-time. But as the whole healthcare situation grew and grew, we've had to switch them over to full-time. So we're probably more like 80-20 now. And it's become a major expense that you have to really pay attention to. So that's really the challenge, is those expenses, being able to control the things you can control, whether it's writing great schedules, keeping an eye on overtime,
But it really comes down to the labor and which is benefits are part of it, you know, the whole compensation package of your compensation expenses. That's, to me, that's our biggest challenge right now.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
You as well.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta, GC Radio. Do you have a question for Matthew?
Aloha, Mike Ahanui. How's it going today, Matthew?
Good, Mike.
Doing
how are
well.
You?
Doing well.
Good. Hey, you know, great show so far. You know, it's always love to hear the come up stories and kind of the different challenges. And you've kind of spoken to it a little bit. You know, your property not necessarily surrounded by population. What are some of the things that you do to keep that business stream going, especially with those ups and downs with the economy? Where do you think that, you know, Eagle Mountain really has its niche?
We've become we have a value we're a value proposition to our guests. We're a typical blue collar locals joint. We don't have a hotel. We really have thrived on that guest service, but also as a locals mentality, keeping things reasonably priced. We are, you know, our food and beverage is reasonably priced. Our concert tickets are reasonably priced, with the idea of being that value proposition. I think that helps in recessions as well. You know, being able to know you're going to get more bang for your buck and get a great experience by the way you're treated. And then in turn, you know, people spend more time with you. It really comes down to, you know, if gas prices go up around here, that really hurts us. So we have to look at what are we doing, whether it's through our Players Club, through, you know, what are we offering on the floor, but in the restaurants. And we've positioned ourselves as that value proposition, whether it's our hold percentage, our give back percentage, and our player development, to continue that same making people feel like they're appreciated and making sure that they feel like they get value for their money. And I think that's really what helps us, what's helped us for all these years, and what continues to help us through the next millennium.
Those are all good points, and I really love the point you keep making about, you know, you can't forget the relationships in this business. It's so important to understand those relationships at every level. And, you know, so you also mentioned, you know, you've been fortunate to have some really great mentorship in your career.
Yes.
How do you identify potential candidates now who deserve or who need that mentorship, so that you can develop the next generation, so you have that succession plan when you're ready to start swinging the golf clubs?
Well, I think it starts with when you, as a department head or a general manager, are actively involved in their day-to-day. You don't sit hiding in your office. One of the first general managers that I had, he would practice, as he called it, MBA, management by walking around, MBWA, excuse me. Management by walking around. And I try to practice that. It's not just to make a presence, but to talk to them and see. And I think you'll find, you'll see the attitudes, you'll see the conversations that you had if they're interested. And, you know, just by the people having those kind of situations, by having access, whether it's to the department head or the general manager himself, taking an interest in everybody and letting the ones that really have the initiative come to you, It really makes it that much easier. I used to have, and I still do it, but I don't do it as often, we call them general manager roundtables, which I kind of stole from the Hilton. They used to do president lunch with the president, I think it was called, and the Hilton did those periodically. Well, I had about, I think we did about 35, 36, basically it was like 13 times on day shift, swing shift, and graveyard, where I would come in on their shift and have a meal with them. And just talk to 10 different people each time, whether they were a supervisor or a frontline staff. And I just asked them, what's your biggest challenge? What do you want to do? Do you want to be a supervisor? Are you going to school? And just take an interest in people. Boy, did I learn some things that I was really upset about. But I also got to know a lot of people that were the reason why this property is so successful. And it's, again, about like the word you used. I agree 100%. It's that relationship. And I found out there are people that work in different departments that wanted to be a supervisor but didn't know how to go about it. And, you know, I've turned their department head onto it. I've taken a few myself. I don't know everything, but all I know is just listening to somebody, you can help them a whole lot. And so that's been our challenge. You know, we're very homegrown in our department heads. We have, I think it's over 30% of our team members, total team members, have been here at least 10 years. We have 500 team members right now. So that's a big number. 33% have been here at least 10 years. That means something's going right. And so a lot of them are department heads and supervisors and managers, and I encourage that even if you're not a supervisor and you want to be, come on into the supervisory training. That's okay. I have no problem with that. That just shows initiative on your part.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Absolutely. You know, give that personal touch and encouragement, I think, is fantastic. What are, you know, we've all been doing it for a while. So, you know, I think every operator has their own, what I call pet peeves. What are some of your pet peeves that you've kind of fostered?
I think two pet peeves, and I think I already mentioned them, but I didn't mention them as pet peeves. One is apathetic. Apathetic service, apathetic way you do your job. You don't care, then why are you here? And then micromanaging. I've had some bad micromanagers, and so I made that conscious decision that I was not going to allow that when I became GM, when I was able to change it. So those are my two big pet peeves. I have this thing about, you know, when I was doing these management roundtables, when I was sitting down with frontline staff, I found too many discrepancies of how things were done. And so I became a saying, if it's a rule for one, it's a rule for all, and that means me as well. So I guess you would say favoritism or really inconsistent application of the rules bothers me. Those are my three, yeah.
No, those are all good ones, I think. I think they're really fantastic. What's something that for you, you know, in your career, you know, now that you've been chairing it for the last 5 years and, you know, you're implementing the vision, what do you see next for Eagle Mountain?
Well, we're trying to move, actually. We're trying to move down to Porterville, next to the Porterville Airport. The tribe has owned some land there for about 26 years. They've owned it in an industrial part. And we're in the process of getting the final EIS done and, you know, to get the, it's part of the two-part determination to get the land into trust, which means the Department of the Interior and the governor have to agree that it's beneficial for the tribe to move and it's not detrimental to the community where we're moving to. And so far, right. So good. And we're in the final process of that and getting to that new big property where we can better serve our market area and better serve our tribe. You know, people,
yeah.
You know, this is my fifth tribe, but people lose sight of the fact is we're not making a board of directors rich. We're not making stockholders rich. We're providing the funding for a government that provides for their people, whether it's police, fire, housing, education, and, you know, the list goes on and on in tribal government. So that's really what it comes down to. We're excited to be able to give them more.
That's great. Awesome. Mike, yeah, thanks so much. Great questions.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, and enjoy your time, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you so much. Have a good night. Some great questions.
Yeah, definitely.
Hello, this is Tino McDonough. Do you have a question for Matthew?
I certainly have. It's Heidi Antizana, Matthew. How are you?
Hello, Heidi. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and hi, Tino. Wonderful
Hello.
To have seen you at NAGA as well.
Yes.
So, two lessons that I often speak to about in my keynote, but today you gave me such amazing examples that I took away as well, is you putting up your hand and inviting yourself to that role of GM as opposed to waiting around to be asked. I think that's absolutely amazing, and more people should learn from you with that, very confident and courageous. And the second one is that your patience is, you know, you were, to be successful, you can't take the elevator, you had to take the stairs, and you certainly did take the stairs for, I think, 23 years.
Well, some of it was, you know, I didn't know if I wanted that responsibility, but then when it came down to it, it was that I wanted the responsibility, I just want to make sure I knew how to do it right. And patience was part of it. I'm not normally a patient person in life. I'm really not. But in my career, and also I know what I don't know, and I know what I need to learn, and I'm constantly trying to do that. So
sure.
Each job has been a different learning experience, whether it's been about the people or my own. It's more learning about myself. And when I finally got here, I know myself and I know I could do it.
And on that note, most of your career was as a marketing director and in marketing. What did
yes.
you take away from your marketing experience that helped you and served you best in your experience as a GM?
You know, we always talk about in marketing, you know, attracting guests, extending guests' visits, and bringing them back for another visit. But when I become the GM, that doesn't change. So, but my scope, instead of focusing just on marketing, spreads out those same principles across all departments. So when it came down to, and again, it's the person, not a number, not a card number, not a position even. It's the person, it's those personal relationships that you have in casino marketing as a host or a player development person. And so having my focus be, let's say, in slots, okay, how are we going to help them attract more people or extend their visits? Food and beverage. How do we attract more people, extend visits, bring people back for an additional visit? And so those three goals are always in the back of my head in my department. Now, someone would say, well, how does that affect the drop team? Well, in the drop team, it's not about my guest. It's about my team. So how do
exactly.
I attract? How do I attract team members that want to be here? How do I keep them
exactly.
here and make them happy in doing what they're doing? And so that's when I always revert back to the people business. And I have two groups of people to worry about. And I think you've heard me say this. I worry about my team first and foremost. If I don't take care of my team, then they're not going to be able to take care of my
sure.
guests. And
so it's not only about
–
yeah, so it's not about the only for you, the guest experience, but it's also the employee experience that's important.
Absolutely. It's paramount. And that's why they're in our building. It's you're part of the team. You're not an employee, and there are guests. They're not customers.
So on that last note, you know, billboards, and you being in marketing, you know that billboards sell the brand's experience. You know, the
mm-hmm.
brand promise, but the employees actually deliver on that promise. Hence, them being
absolutely.
So paramount. So how do you ensure that your employees do not become apathetic and don't get complacent and that they elevate their game all the time? What do you do towards that?
Well, we're trying to do a couple of different things. I mean, everybody's had guest service programs in different properties. We're looking at different ways of motivating our team, both within the department and within the whole property. Way back in the day, Harrah's used to do the Better People Place, and they even had competitions between departments. We're working on ideas like that. But one of the biggest things, again, I hate to use the same example, but it's really just listening and making sure that
yeah.
the department heads are empathetic to the teammates' struggle, whether it's in their work or in their personal life. But especially, you know, what's your biggest challenge? That's what I ask people all the time. What's your biggest challenge
right.
in your job? And it always bleeds into personal life, which we have school, we have life. Life's messy, right? And it's easy to say, well, keep your personal life at home. How hard is that? That's impossible.
Sure.
So that's
sure.
that's who you are. So having a department head or general manager be empathetic to people's struggles and empathetic to what the goal is and understanding how if this person's happy to be here and feels appreciated, just like if your guest feels appreciated, that they're going to want to go and keep coming back and want to be a manager and pass on that great tradition.
Awesome.
That's really what it
Matthew.
Comes down to me.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Tino. We'll chat. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good evening.
Thanks for calling in.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Matthew?
I do. Matthew, Tino, thank you for getting me on your show tonight. And Matthew, you've been very inspirational. A lot of good comments. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for calling
You're
in.
You're welcome.
Yep.
You bet. So I had a question on, I guess, technology. So you look at like bill rejections, and back in the days, right, they had candlelights going off on the slot machines to tell you the paper's low and to replace it, whatnot. How do you view technology? And I was actually at the, it's funny you mentioned it there, at the Horizon at Lake Tahoe. I did some consulting down there. How do you view technology in the next, you know, 5 years or how often to maybe improve that guest experience? You know, I've been at properties where we text hosts right when a VIP arrives so that the host can then go and get that personal touch to go talk to that customer, right, to that slot machine. But, you know, throughout the years, and, you know, you remember back in the days we had slot table and or slots and table rating slips where they did it manually to now it's all automated, right? How do you view, like, technology and all the data you guys have? And it's like, how can we make the gaming experience better for customers? Or how can we recognize them faster? Or how can we pay out that jackpot faster, right? So in the whole macro part of things, you know, like people are being serviced quicker by actual people, but they're using technology to kind of help support the jobs they're doing.
You know, I don't know if this is possible, but I'm looking forward to the day where it's so personalized that, yeah, it's technology and they recognize you when you walk through the door and you sit down at your machine and it says, "Welcome, Matthew. Here's your favorite games you played the last three visits. Would you like to play something different?" But at the same time, I want to have somebody say, "Come up and shake my hand." And how you can integrate both those two pieces, I think, is the biggest challenge. And how, and technology is awesome. I love technology, and I really, you know, I want to have my own robot butler and name him Alfred, but because I have a secret desire to be Batman. But I have a secret desire to be Batman. But ultimately, I'm not going to eliminate my family members just because I have a robot butler. But the idea is, how can we go forward? Because guest service doesn't go out of style. Personal touch doesn't go out of style. The need, the human need to, even if you got a complaint, to tell a human being your complaint, to be heard, whether it's a compliment or a complaint, that's never going to go away. So how does technology help you do that? How does technology help you deliver the service you need? Seemingly, it's a tool, right? You know, back, remember when all of a sudden the internet became popular and everybody had to have a website? And then all of a sudden, everybody's website was just like a static brochure on a screen. Like, well, so what? And now you look at websites nowadays, they play music, they have videos. You can have AI experiences within those websites. But ultimately, you still want to talk to somebody when you want to make a hotel reservation or when you have a complaint. So how do we combine the two? I don't have the answer for that, but I think whoever can – figure out the way in multiple systems, maybe that's going to be the most successful place to be.
Yeah. So you see eventually technology playing as far as automation or being able to notify employees quicker or some type of role into customer service?
Absolutely. I think it's really what it comes down to. Yeah, I mean, it would be great if you, let's say it's a bill acceptor jam that you press a button and the bill acceptor jams, unjams itself. Yeah, that's no big deal. But it'd be nice for somebody that walked in, when I walked in the door and I went up to the bar and said, "Hey, Matthew, how you been? We haven't seen you in a while." And you actually have a person to say hi. You know, those kind of things, you know, through the, I don't know, not facial recognition, but something similar where as soon as you walk in the building, no matter who you are, if you're a rated player of any level, then you have some sort of appreciation, which, again, would turn around and drive more people to be involved in the club.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think through all the customer studies and focus groups I've done, the number one things the customers come back saying is recognition.
Yep.
And they just want that recognition when they come in. So it's good. Yeah, I appreciate your comments, Matthew. Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Rob.
You bet.
Take care, buddy.
You bet.
Great stuff. I think we got time for one more great question, so. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Matthew?
Hello, can you hear me?
We sure can.
Hello. Hi, how are you?
Hello, Tino? Can you hear us? Good, good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear.
Great. Matt, I've really been enjoying your conversation and all the things you said. It's interesting. I was doing a crash course on who you are, and I realized that you grew up not too far from me, and you went to Kent, and we both worked at Viejas a million years ago. And I share your passion about guest service and also about technology. And I have a couple of questions. I guess the first thing is basically a comment. I'm currently working on some projects on the Las Vegas Strip, and in that role I've been shopping casinos as an unidentified hotel guest and then a player. And the sense that I'm getting from many of the larger properties on the Strip is, if anything, technology is used to replace people, and it's not used to, in my experience, it's not being used to empower a team member to go and fix a service issue or things like that. I've stayed at properties where I waited over an hour and a half for what turned out to be a worn-out room service dinner. That was $85 or something, and call to see where it is. Nobody answers. Literally, nobody answers the phone. And then, you know, it's inedible, and you call room service again, and you get another voice prompt, and they say that we'll get back to you, and they never do. And frankly, to be honest, I may never work again, but that's what I see happening on the Las Vegas Strip. I don't see technology using to enhance guest experience. I see technology used to replace human beings and to save an extra 0.1% to put to the bottom line for investors. And I don't know that putting, return on investment ahead of customer service is the right way to go. I was just wondering if you have any thoughts on that, and then I have another question for you.
Well, I agree. I mean, when it comes down to it, if the person doesn't feel appreciated, doesn't feel like you value them, no matter how big or how small they play, they're going to go find someone that does. And to me, technology is the ultimate tool in helping along the way, helping implement that, whether it's, like you said, empowering a team member to be able to take care of that guest, or even, you know, yeah, it gets busy in room service, but, you know, wouldn't it be cool if you had almost a hologram where you talk to that person directly, where they could still be doing multitasking and still be able to get your problem across. It has to be used as a tool. I don't think you can be absolute one way or another, no technology or all technology. It really comes down to, you know, the human need, as I said prior, the human need to communicate with somebody and to have somebody to hear you, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely accurate, and I see it disappearing in some instances, and I think that's a loss.
One of the things, I mean, if you keep in mind, one of the reasons why, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tino, or even if you disagree with me, either one of you disagree with me, but one of the ways that the tribal casinos in California back in the days of Viejas, when they first started in 96, 97, when we were just starting to get things up and running, one of the reasons why they became so popular is because we took care of the people that maybe weren't the whales and the top-end players. We took care of the average person,
yeah,
and we did it with a smile on our face, and we were appreciative,
yeah,
of them. That's why they didn't go to Vegas as much or at all sometimes. They went to the Baronas and the Viejas and the Sequans and even Pachungas, because they knew the dealers, they knew the slot attendants, and they were treated like they were special, and that's really what won over California.
Yeah, yeah, a huge state for gambling. You'd say it's poised to surpass Nevada at a certain point. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's all local, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're working with a property right now that's actually in California, and they pride themselves in a similar sort of guest service experience that they believe that they provide. And there certainly is a core of repeat guests that have been going there for decades that know them by name and bring gifts and, you know, replicate
right.
some of the thoughts that you had. But as a consultant there, I also, you know, without a jacket and a tie and blue jeans, I walked around. I didn't experience that as somebody that was unknown to them. And I think to some extent that organic, natural growth of that sort of culture is the most honest and the most sincere. But I think as managers, we have to learn how to duplicate that for everyone, but, you know, not just the known players, but the person walking in that's new. And I'm wondering, I was thinking when you said that, you know, you're hopefully going to be moving to a more central location with, access to a greater market. How fragile do you think those relationships are and that culture is? How do you move that from point A to point B without losing, your soul?
Well, sure. Well, you know what? Actually, we're in a very advantageous spot. We're moving down to be closer to our guests, as both our current guests and potential guests that live in Porterville is where we are, that won't make the drive right now because it's up a very windy road, and at night it's not a pleasant drive, and especially if it's rainy or foggy. We have that advantage. But, you know, I've worked at other places where we moved or done things where we had to be very conscious of that. You know, when you build a new place or remodel a section of a casino, what does every guest say? Oh, yeah, I paid for that. Now they're going to tighten the machine. Right? That's the impending thought.
Yep.
So one of the big challenges that we have is not changing who we are. But you're going to get the same service, that same personalized service, even though we're going to be bigger. And we're going to have almost twice as many team members, but we're going to get the same service, the same feel. We're not changing our name, but we're making a specific effort to make sure we don't change that level of service, to make sure that it stays at a high level, and to make sure that those relationships, whether it's between departments or with guests and individuals, that it doesn't change. We didn't just all of a sudden become, elite or exclusive.
Yeah.
You know, we're still, as we were named by guests, the people's casino. We're for the people. And even though we're going to have more amenities to take care of the better players, we also are going to have a nicer facility and better access for all the players, no matter what your level is. And that's the promise that you have to make, and that's your brand. Your brand is that promise. And so this brand has had longevity, and we're not going to change that just because we're moving into a new house.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
That's
great. I wish you all the luck when that occurs, and I've enjoyed this evening. Thank you so much, Matt.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Vince. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
What a great show, Vince. It just flew by.
It did. It did fly by.
It's been a pleasure having you on the show. And
thanks
really
for having me. I really appreciate it.
And I really look forward to having you back, you know, as soon as you – I know that you got a lot of things going on, and there could be some major moves happening within the next year or so. So we definitely want you back on the show. Thanks for so much, Matthew, and we'll definitely talk soon.
Thanks, Tino. Thanks for everything. Appreciate it. Have a good night.
I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. What a great guy. A lot of information and just a great storyteller and patience. 23 years before he became a GM. Next week, Thursday, I have two women that I've had on the show before, Colleen Birch from Cosmopolitan and Suzanne Trout from Foxwoods. Amazing people. Their interviews were amazing, so I can't wait to have them both on the show. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. You have a good night tonight. Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.